Hello and welcome to the Browns Blitz. Today is Tuesday, December the 10th, and this is episode 31. The Browns did pick up a victory this week against the Bengals, but we're going to turn our attention to Clay Matthews Jr. and his bid for the Hall of Fame. We have a special guest today. Jennifer Matthews is on the show talking with us today. Jen, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. And Peter Jones, for all the way from London, where it is very late, is here to also join in the conversation. How are you, Peter?
I'm good, Rod. How are you?
I'm doing just great.
Really appreciate you having me on the show. Thank you.
It's my pleasure as well. So, you know, before we really get into talking about Clay, Jen, I think everybody would kind of like to maybe just catch up kind of on your life a little bit, because, you know, just kind of watching you on Twitter and just kind of hearing, you know, the few conversations we have, you're very busy and you're kind of, you know, you do a lot of traveling and that. So, kind of just catch us up a little bit with, I'm not going to ask you to cover the past year because it's been a while since we've talked on the podcast, but, you know, maybe just, what you're doing in your professional life and some of the highlights, you know, of things that you've been doing recently for yourself.
Yeah, I'd love to. I won't bore everyone with the year-long edition. We'd be here for like 4 hours. So I don't want to put anyone to sleep this early, at least.
That's right.
No, so gosh, it's been a crazy year, but I am working with a prison, a nonprofit that serves men and women affected by crime and incarceration. So actually tomorrow night and the following night, I'll be spending the evening in a men's prison, bringing people in just to kind of serve and spend time with these men. And it's an incredible organization called Prison Fellowship. And then we serve their families. We have in-prison programming, and then we serve their families on the outside of prison. So I've been able to leverage a lot of my sports relationships with teams and pro athletes to kind of really help serve these kids. So we had done a football clinic in June with the LA Rams. We'll be doing a Christmas party with them. And then I'm talking to some other organizations about teaming up and just really kind of helping serve these inner city kids. So that's my main thing. And then SiriusXM renewed my contract and increased my role. So in addition to being, you know, I laugh when I say a fantasy football expert, because I don't know if there is such a thing, but I guess that's what they call me, something like that. I don't know. So I call in and appear on multiple shows. And then I also record videos that appear in the app. So those are on camera, which takes me back to my TV days. So that's fun. And then just working on the Hall of Fame campaign with my dad, which I know we'll dive into, and the Ring of Honor and kind of all that went with that. And then just spending time with the family and then traveling. I love to travel, and I go on mission trips all over the world and work in children's orphanages and build schools and wells for clean water, and managed to squeeze in two trips to Europe. I spent a big portion of my summer traveling throughout Italy. I called it my Leave No Car Behind tour. I ate my way through Italy, you guys, and it was magical every moment of it. All the gelato, all the pasta, all the pizza.
I was going to say that picture of breakfast you put out on Instagram was incredible.
I was like, this is actually embarrassing. But anyways, I had to share because it was just so magnificent. Yeah. And then I went up to Austria and Germany, and then went to London in October for the Rams-Bengals game. And that was fun. So I was saying before we started recording that I'm determined now to move to London and marry into the royal family. And that's going to be what I'm going to do.
It's all decided.
I mean, I have big plans, guys, in my free time, which I have not. No, I'm just kidding. But I really enjoyed my time over there. I absolutely loved it. And it was super cool to see an NFL game abroad and just to see the energy that surrounded it. And I was pleasantly surprised because I just didn't know. I'm like, I don't know what the market's going to be overseas, but you saw all different teams being represented and saw lots of Browns jerseys and a few people recognized me from Twitter, because the guy in front of me at the game actually turned around without any introduction, and I didn't know who he was. He said, "By the way, your dad does deserve to be in the Hall of Fame, so keep working." And I thought, "Oh my gosh!" And he said, "I'm from Scotland, and I follow you, and I follow the NFL, and I follow you, and he absolutely deserves to be in." So that was kind of a cool moment overseas. I thought, "Wow, you're global, yeah." So it's kind of a little hot, you know, a little overall view of what I've been doing.
Yeah, on the fantasy note, it's been a little bit of a challenge this year at some
point. Oh, yeah. And last week, week 14, it was just the theme seemed to be injuries. So people are just plagued. And at this point, you know, for the people who, congrats to all of you who are, you know, in the playoffs, it's hard because these people are going down. So it's like, all right, how do I, you know, have a competitive lineup, you know, especially at this point where it's do or die. So yeah, it's definitely been an interesting year in fantasy, but I enjoy it and I get to talk about it all the time, so I like it.
Yeah, well, that's great. Thanks for that update. And I'm sure that Peter, if he doesn't have direct connections to the royal family, he could probably at least maybe, you know, point you in the right direction.
Yeah, Peter, I need all the connections.
I'll see if I can find you an eligible bachelor.
Yeah, I'm single and on the market, so... You do your thing. We'll talk later.
Okay.
All right. Well,
there must be a spare prince somewhere.
I mean, that's what I'm thinking. My dad told me to stay away from athletes, which is ironic. So I'm like, well, you know, I don't know what this is about. I'm like, Dad, I this is the problem. He's such a good man. He set the bar so high. I'm like, it's your fault that I'm single. And he's like, wait, how is this my fault now? I said, because you're such a good man. You set the standards so high. And then he gives a typical like humble Clay line, like, you know, I don't know. So he deflects it somehow. And then we just go about our day. So anyways, I digress.
can I just say, just digressing from football, I think you're following the work that you do, Jen, with the charities and for those less fortunate than us, I think that's really special.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's it's a huge passion of mine. And I was just raised to just always think about other people and serving and going on these mission trips. And, you know, especially around the holidays, I feel like it's an extra tender time for those who are struggling or may not have as much or you know, so it's my honor. That's what kind of my heart beats for. And it's taken me into all these sorts of crazy places all over Africa and the Congo and Uganda and South Africa and children's orphanages in Haiti and Mexico and into prisons and inner cities and Skid Row in Los Angeles. And you know, for the rest, as you know, as long as I'm here on this earth, I will serve and I will use, you know, everything that I've been so richly blessed with to, you know, to hopefully try to make a difference and serve, you know, other people in whichever way I can.
That's great. And,
I think when we spoke last year, you were really just getting started with your work with the prison. So it sounds like that's really expanding for you and going well, correct?
Yeah, it's going really well. And the sports side of it is fun too, just to kind of combine those, my two passions of, you know, sports and then serving and giving back and just to kind of get some of the athletes and now these organizations and get them on board. And, you know, I think there's so much negativity that's covered in the media, you know, about professional athletes. And I'm not saying that doesn't exist, but there are a lot of good ones out there who are doing a lot of good things for their communities. And it's just been really encouraging and inspiring just to see a lot of these guys step up and really want to serve and, you know, and use their platforms for good. So
yeah,
I'll do whatever I can to facilitate that.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, let's say before we dive into the Hall of Fame, let's go back to the Ring of Honor ceremony when the Browns hosted the Rams on Sunday night, and just how special that was. I came up for that game. You know, I was hoping we'd get to say hi to each other, but you were so busy. You were on the field as often as some of the players, I think. So.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know how much of the actual game I saw. It was kind of, you know what, it's still so surreal. It kind of feels like a dream. And it was so crazy and it went by so quickly, but I was so busy because I was kind of like coordinating all the media side for my dad and where I needed to be. And then, you know, I got to be the dog pound captain, which was awesome, except the fans were so loud. Okay, this is a funny story about that. So Cleveland fans are so awesome and they were so loud when I said, you know, I'm here with my dad, Clay Matthews is going to be, you know, inducted into the Ring of Honor at halftime. But first, they got so loud that I couldn't hear myself talk, first of all, and I had no in-ear piece. So, and then secondly, Coach McVay of the Rams, the head coach, said to Clay afterwards, he gave him a hard time. He said, whoa, 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 what's your sister doing getting the Browns fans all riled up? Like, we couldn't hear. And I thought that was so funny that he even noticed that. So, I said, well, we were Browns fans that night. So, anyway, so it was just funny, but yeah, we were all over the field and it was, the whole family was there and I had flown back in the summer to meet with the Browns and I met, John Dorsey for the first time and he could not have been nicer. He made me laugh so hard because for those of you who don't know, Dorsey Lee has the record for most tackles on special teams in a season when he was on the Packers.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a stud player. You know, a lot of people forget that. They just think of him as a GM and like what he did in KC and all over. But he was so funny. I can't repeat all the words he said to me because there are a few bad ones in there. But he meant well. He said the gist of the message was, tell your dad he's a stud. Let's leave it at that. We'll leave all the experts out. But I was sitting there. Okay, I'll relay the message. Probably in other terms, but I'll in other words. But I'll relay the message. And then he sent me home with one of the, you know, his good old hoodies or the sweatshirts that are not, you know, at the bottom, they're wide. So he goes, oh, and give this to your dad. And then funny enough, I left some of my notes in his office. So I got a call on my cell phone like an hour later and he's like, Jennifer Matthews, please. It's John Dorsey. You left your notes in my office. I'll send them to you. And I'm thinking, what is going on? But, you know, I had really hoped it would be that night so that my brother Clay could be there as well. And we were, the whole family was back in Cleveland and it was just surreal. It was so, so fun. I will never forget that night for the rest of my life.
I mean, it was amazing, just the whole atmosphere. And then when, as your dad was wrapping up and things were wrapping up, when your brother came back out, you know, and kind of came up on stage and started speaking, that was tremendous.
We couldn't have scripted that any better. It was kind of like a Hollywood ending because I had asked Clay before the game. I'm like, listen, I know that you, like, the game takes priority, but if there's any way you can get out here at the very end or if we run late or whatever, and he said, oh, absolutely. Like, I'll do my best. So the fact that happened, although the funny thing was when they surprised my dad and had Clay on the video and he made some comments about, well, hopefully we can make some halftime adjustments, all the fans started saying, boo. I was dying. But it worked out so well and it was a special night for our family. It's our family Christmas card is our picture of all of us in our Browns in our, you know, number 57 jerseys. And I think the two moments for me throughout the weekend that the two that stood out to my dad as well, because he told me this, were one, when, as you mentioned, I had to be on the field a lot and I was kind of taking my dad around because he had to do interviews and then he had to be in one place to be interviewed live on the field, all these things. And when he was walking, when we were walking the perimeter of the field and the fans saw him coming, they were so loud. It literally, I mean, not to be dramatic, but it took my breath away. I it took everything in me to not just fall apart and cry because they were so welcoming and so warm. Yeah. And they were just better than I even thought they could be. And I had high, you know, expectations going in. And my dad looked at me and said, they're killing me. Like in the best way. He said, I I'm speechless. Like he really started to get choked up. Like, he's like, I didn't know they still cared this much, you know, like in the best way possible. And so that was one thing that just, I mean, like I wanted to go around and hug every single fan and be like, thank you for welcoming my father and for, you know, supporting him and for just being unbelievable fans, you know, because my dad said, I retired so long ago, you know, they probably don't know who I am. And, you know, Mr. Humble,
yeah.
Yeah.
I promise. Thank you.
I'm getting, I'm getting choked up just listening to you talking about it.
Oh, yeah, it was, he just kept looking at me and going, oh my gosh. Like he didn't even know what to say. And then the second part was when his name, when they dropped that covering, you know, the flag thing that was over his name and his name appeared in the stadium, he said it really hit him. And he said, I knew it was going to be such like a monumentous and unbelievable moment. He's like, but I could never have imagined it would be like this. And he's like, when they removed that and my name was there, I think we're all up on that stage and we turned around and it was just like I said, it just felt surreal. And we were, and that will forever be in Cleveland Stadium. And it was such a cool moment, not only for my dad, but for all of us, for my mom. You know, they've been together since they were 18 and 19 years old. And just for all of us to come back to such an amazing city that we spent half of our childhood in, and to have these people, like I said, just welcome him with open arms and be so unbelievably supportive. It just gave me this quick preview of one day, whenever that is, Lord willing, it's this year, but when it happens and when he goes into Canton, like just knowing what will take place there when Cleveland takes over that city, because they will. Like, I'm like, I just can't wait. So.
Yeah, the cheers were so loud for your dad. And I'm not sure if it was the loudest when he was just introduced, or when your brother mentioned the Hall of Fame, or when your dad's name was revealed. I can't recall, but yeah, it was emotional. It was loud. It was just, it was Cleveland at its best, just showing the love that they have for your dad, I think, for your family.
Yeah. And I think something that my dad, and he mentioned it in a lot of his interviews that weekend, and he reiterated to us personally, like as his family, he's like, Cleveland is such a special place, you know? And he's like, they have such unique fan base that they are so invested and they care so deeply about their players. And through a lot of really rough seasons, you know what I mean? It's like Browns fans have stuck by them and rallied around them. And there's a loyalty and a passion there that is hard to find. And I've been around a lot of organizations, you know, in my short time on this earth, but there's something special about Cleveland, and it will always have a special place in our heart. And we're Browns fans for life. Like that was another thing he kind of said. It's like, we always like, okay, yes, we're Rams fans as well because of Clay. And then my cousin Jake is on the Falcons. So we root for them, but then we're always like, but how do those Brownies do? You know, it's just something that we're just so invested in. And so that it's a special place. And, you know, my dad had never been to Ohio when he was drafted there in 1978 with the 12th pick in the first round. And my mom was like, we're going where? You know, like this California girl born and raised near the beach. And it ended up being the biggest blessing and just the greatest place. And he met so many amazing people and both teammates and neighbors and just everyone. The city really, you know, welcomed my family. And we felt that again at the Ring of Honor. And it was, like I said, I wish I could thank every single person individually because it was pretty magical.
Yeah. So let's get into this Hall of Fame deal.
Let's know, do
since last year, you know, the Ring of Honors happened, and when the ballot came out, the online voting, there's a picture of your dad on the ballot. I'm thinking,
I'm feeling
like momentum, but this is like momentum for the fans and what the fans want. But what do we know about what's happening, you know, with those voters behind closed doors? Does it, you know, is this true momentum, you know, on his fourth time, you know, making it to this round? It feels different to me this time. What's your thought, John, and Peter? You know, how do you feel this time around?
Yeah, you want to go ahead, Peter?
Sure. I think you're right, Rod. It feels different to last year. And I think that for players that have been retired some time now. So unless guys are going in as, you know, first ballot Hall of Famers, there seems to be this process now of being a semi-finalist for a number of years before making it to the finalist group. Mm-hmm. And I think that's exactly where we are with your dad, Jen. And my gut feel is he makes the final this time. And I think once you get into that finalist group, who knows what happens behind closed doors there. It does feel different, Rod. It does.
Yeah, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly, Peter. And it's important that you mentioned, so this is his fourth time making it to the cut of 25. Now, up until they go to 15, it's all a vote by mail ballot. So the Hall of Fame voters are just voting on their own at home. So you're relying on them to do their due diligence on every single player, right? And my concern, you know, people will be like, well, why do you feel like you need a campaign? I don't feel like I have to I don't really consider it campaigning. What I consider it is creating awareness of his body of work, because his body of work speaks for itself, and that is Hall of Fame worthy. And that, like, every single current Hall of Famer I've spoken to, from Anthony Munoz to Joe Gilamalier to Warren Moon to John Elway, like, all of these some of the best players of all time are like, he absolutely deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And media people. I saw Al Michaels when my dad and I were walking out onto the field at the Ring of Honor game, and he stopped and he said, you know, it's way overdue that you're in the Hall of Fame. And I thought, okay, so I'm not the only one who thinks that, you know what I mean? It's
that's pretty high praise.
Yeah, so that's pretty strong. People who hold so much weight. And so it's so important that he gets to the group of 15, because then the voters from you know, the Cleveland market, which would be Tony Grossi and Mary Kay Cabot, then they can present, like, the you know, appropriate media person in that market then presents their case to the voters. But until then, like I said, it's all vote by mail. And so I think once he gets in there and the voters are able to see his body of work, I think that's when it's a game changer. And all the voters I've spoken to, whether it's John McClain in Houston, Rick Gosselin in Dallas, Pete Doherty in Green Bay, obviously Tony Grossi and Mary Kay Cabot, who else have I spoken to? All of the other voters I've spoken to are like, he has my vote, you know? So that's kind of like, that's the huge next step, is getting to that 15. And I believe once you get to that 15, at some point you will get in. It may not be that year, but the likelihood of you getting in, because people are then exposed to your full body of work, there's just more time to look at individual players.
Yeah, I would 100% agree with that. It's become a process. It really has. And a more difficult process, like I say, for those guys that didn't get in on their first ballot, it becomes a more difficult process. I mean, I know that it's not quite the same circumstance, but you just have to look at Jerry Kramer with the Packers. And Jerry retired 51 years ago. So it took him 50 years to get into the Hall of Fame, and he suddenly didn't become a better player last year than he was 20 years ago or 30 years ago. Nothing changed. But you know, the publicity, it's unfortunate in a way that has to happen, but you have to get that message out there. You have to get people to go and look at the body of work to understand the player and how great a player he was. And it just feels like this is the year that your dad's going to get to the final. And then, like you say, I think that once you're in that final 15, I think your chances are very good.
Yeah. And Jerry Kramer is such a good example. He had such an incredible body of work, and he was so long overdue. And I got connected to Alicia through the Packers, and she is just an incredible human being and has offered lots of support and encouragement, because she knows what it's like to be the daughter of of the player, and you know that they belong in there, and you know, beyond me, to take me out of it because I'm his daughter, but all of the people who've come alongside and said, yes, I will give a testimonial. Yes, he needs to be in there. Yes, I will make a phone call on his behalf, whatever it is. You know, she knows what that process is like. And I don't want my dad to have to wait that long. And she said the same thing. She's like, the only negative around his induction was that they waited so long and he was so much older. It's harder. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's I think of the year my uncle was inducted, which I think was 2007 or 2008. I think it was 2007. And Gene Hickerson from the Browns was inducted that year. And my heart broke because he was absolutely worthy, but he was struggling with dementia. And I don't even think half the time he fully knew where he was. And that I'm like, that's the problem with the system. You know, I'm like, mm-hmm. you can't wait this long to, you know, for deserving players. They should be put in earlier. But, you know, it is what it is. And it definitely, Peter, as you say, is a process. And I do feel a different sort of momentum this year. And yeah, so, I mean, we'll see. All I can do is kind of try to get the information out there and educate, you know, and the voters as well as I can. And then, you know, just trust that it will happen.
Yeah. So let's go over the case.
Let's do it. Let's get to numbers. For all the people
let's get to the numbers.
Enough of the fluff.
The numbers are undeniable.
For the stats people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Let's just blow people away with the numbers.
Yeah.
So, you want me to mention some of the numbers, or do you have those in front of you?
John, I can do it. I know them.
You have them all in your head, don't you?
Well, this is a thing. Yeah. I feel like I could recite them in my sleep, like I dream of them. Yeah. Well, I mean, first of all, you look at he has 278 games played. That's number one at linebacker in NFL history. He has 1,561 tackles. That's number three in NFL history. And if I'm not mistaken, the two people in front of him were both middle linebackers who just tend to get more tackles because they're on the inside. He has 248 starts at linebacker, number one in NFL history. He had, now remember that sacks weren't an official stat until 1982. So what I did was I went to the Browns and I said, what were his sacks from 78 to 82? And that total number from his rookie year until the end of his career was 83 and a half sacks. He had 27 forced fumbles, 14 fumble recoveries, 16 interceptions. He's in the USC, University of Southern California Hall of Fame. He's in the Browns Ring of Honor. Like the only thing that's left is Canton. And I, you know, it's like I'm working with this guy, Scott Mayberry, Rod, you know, Scott, and he's put together these graphics and been so helpful. And the more I looked at them, the more we kind of broke down the stats. I'm like, this is unreal. So it may be hard without the graphic in front of you, but just like roll with me, guys. So like impact plays, okay, those would be considered sacks, interceptions, forced fumbles, and fumble recoveries. If you look at the top linebackers in the 80s and 90s, Ricky Jackson, Lawrence Taylor, Derek Thomas, Andre Tippett, Ray Lewis, Junior Seau, and Derek Brooks, every single one of those has been inducted into the Hall of Fame, with the exception of my dad. And my dad is number four on that list out of all those guys, four out of eight. And he's the only one not in. And when I look at his career, I'm like, okay, he could play in the 3-4. He could play in the 4-3. And for the majority of his career, and especially at the beginning, he was asked to drop into coverage all the time. And even my Uncle Bruce said it, you know, because he used to play against him being on the Oilers. He's play against him twice a year, every year. He said when they finally let my dad loose, he was like, unbelievable. Like sacks were coming left and right.
And I think I'm just going to interject there. I think that's a case that you can't overstate. That ability to play outside in the 4-3 and then play outside in the 3-4. Significantly different, you know, the 4-3 linebacker, you're talking Jack Ham, if you like, of the Steelers. You're talking about that guy that's dropping back into coverage. And then for the other half of his career, you're asking him to play outside linebacker, rushing the passer in the Lawrence Taylor role. So to be able to do both of those things for almost half of your career each is pretty special.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when you talk to opposing, you know, offensive players and you know, those Hall of Fame guys that I had mentioned earlier, Mike Munchak, Anthony Munoz, just so many of these amazing guys. And in, you know, Ozzie Newsome, they said he could do everything and do it well. Like he could defend the pass. He could defend, you know, he could defend the running game. He could, like, whatever you needed him to do, he could do. And yeah, if it was up to him, I think you'd ask most players, like, hey, let me just rush. Let me just be like an outside linebacker / DN hybrid and just let me pass rush. Just let me, like, what a dream, right? But that's not always the case. And his thing was, he was such a team player. He's like, I'll do whatever I need to do to help us win. It's not about the individual awards or accolades. It's about the wins. And so, and the team as a whole. So I think, when you really start to break it down and look at some of those numbers and those stats, it's almost like you're like, this is ludicrous that he's not in, especially when you look at like the company he's in and compare his stats to these current Hall of Famers. My point in releasing those stats is to show that he is comparable, if not better, than a lot of those guys. That is not to downplay their bodies of work. This is to say, look, against the greatest players of all time to ever take the field in the National Football League, he is right there, if not better. So that's what kind of really got me excited as I first started this campaign, when I really kind of studied the stats and kind of broke that down.
I think the numbers speak for themselves. And there's one combination of numbers that jumps off the page to me. And there's only one player in the history of the NFL that's got more than 50 sacks and 15 plus interceptions. And that's your dad.
Oh.
And that's a pretty special combination to be able to do both of those things. And that one kind of leaps off the page at me. And then, like you say, you add in the fumble recoveries and the forced fumbles, and it's, as I said previously, that those numbers they just speak for themselves.
Yeah, when I look at this too, I think that if Clay were to come out today, be drafted in the NFL today, he would be drafted more than likely as an edge rusher, and he would pile up the sacks, and he would easily hit 100 sacks, 100, 150 sacks. And that 100 sack number seems to be a magical number to get you into the Hall of Fame. And,
right.
And so he's been essentially held out of the Hall of Fame due to his versatility.
Yeah.
So he's
that's so interesting to say that, Rob, because that's exactly what my Uncle Bruce said. He was like, he was able to do so many things and do them well. It's almost like people don't know how to look at any one of them and say, well, what about this one? That was beyond his control. And if anything, like, to be that versatile, typically you have someone and they're, if they are at the top of their game, they're exceptionally good at one skill set, right? Yeah, they may be good at dropping in a cover, but they're really good at pass rushing. But he was able to do it all. So that's the thing. And at a high level for so many years. And then when I talked to, I reached out to Nick Saban, because Nick Saban was my dad's D coordinator under Bill Belichick. And he told me, and I'll release that graphic again, but he said he's one of the greatest players I ever coached. He could do it all. He was a coach's dream. So to hear some of the best coaches of all time say these kinds of things, and Hall of Fame opponents, not his own teammates, opponents that went up against him 2 times a year, every year, seeing, words of praise. And even just having talked to Warren Moon, he was like, he's been a headache for me since college. And I did not realize that they were in college at the same time, when Warren Moon was at UW, at University of Washington, and my dad was at USC. And Warren goes, oh yeah, he's been a headache for me since college, And so, and he said, and it's long overdue. And so the more I talk to people and, it confirms and it validates all so many of us are saying.
Yeah, he sacked Warren Moon. I was just rereading Menachem's article that he wrote last year, which put everything together. And he sacked he sacked Warren Moon 7.5 times and John Elway 5 times. So a headache is probably a nice way to put it.
That's what higher honor could you get than your opponents, speaking words of praise and saying, hey, I'm in the Hall of Fame and he absolutely deserves to be in there. It is long overdue. And you know what? The other thing I get sometimes is people, I thought he was already in. And I'm like, so I think you assume he's already in. So that's the other thing that's surprising. And, Dan Fouts, it was interesting because my brother Clay had a pregame meeting with him, production meeting before one of the games that CBS was covering last season when he was on the Packers. And Dan Fouts came in, he said, "Hey, I saw that tweet that you retweeted. I knew your dad was good, but I had no idea his stats were at that level." And Clay kind of was like, "Yeah, I've been telling you." And he's like, "He's got my vote." You know, so it's interesting that, you know, some people just aren't even aware. And so that's like, I just want to create awareness. Like I said, his body of work speaks for itself. It'll get him in. But I think a lot of people have forgotten because he's such a humble man. He's not out in the media talking about himself, showing up here or there. He's just like a good, solid man who loved to play football. And, yeah. You know, he'll never talk about his career or his body of work. I mean, I'm sure you got the gist of it from his Ring of Honor speech. And if you heard any of the interviews he did that weekend, I don't think he stopped talking about his teammates.
That's all he talked about was his teammates and how good they were. And
he said he almost felt like it wasn't right to accept an individual award in a sport that is so team based. He said, "Cause I wouldn't be here if I wasn't standing on the shoulders of my teammates." And, you know, and so that's just who he is. He's inherently humble, and he's, you know, I think that's another reason the city of Cleveland really embraced him. He's just like a good, solid, like humble blue collar guy. You know what I mean? He's not flashy. He plays hard. I mean, he's retired. He played hard, but he, you know, off the field, he's just like a normal guy who goes to work and doesn't talk about it. And, you know, just shows up and is reliable and consistent. And, you know, there's no like Hollywood or drama there. He's just, you know, and so.
I remember watching, I think it was Tom Jackson, the old Denver Broncos outside linebacker, who would have played similar time probably to do that. But he used to do a show on ESPN or Fox, one of the channels. And he had this great line, and he used to come out with it quite often, that greatness needs no self-promotion. And that's how I feel. Hey, from the little I know, from reading about your dad and from hearing you talk about him, that's how I feel about your dad.
Well, and that's who he is. I mean, like through and through. I mean, he's just like, my brothers and I call him old school. Like, it's like our nickname. We're like, he's so old school because he, and unfortunately that's now like, it has to be an old school thing, but he's super humble. He's super salt of the earth. You know, he doesn't look at himself any differently than any other person. He's like, I had a job because I was lucky to do something I was incredibly passionate about, but I wanted to be the best and I wanted to win. And I love the camaraderie with my teammates. I think that's the thing he misses the most, is being out there competing with, you know, kind of these, they become a second family. It's like, you're with them, you're going through the trenches with them. And, you know, I at times, to be completely honest, I've worried that his humility has hurt him, but I wouldn't change that because that's who he is.
Yeah.
And when he does get in, it will be, what a wonderful example, right? How refreshing to see someone who's achieved that much by worldly standards, yet remained so humble and so grounded and unaffected.
That's right. So let's talk about just a little bit about the teams he played on and the number of Pro Bowls as far as an argument against him getting in. Because people will bring this up, that he played for 19 seasons and he only made four Pro Bowls.
Right. You know, the interesting thing was in 1984, I don't have all those specific stats memorized, but in 1984, which was one of his best seasons, he did not make the Pro Bowl. And he led the team. I'd have to look this up. But he had, like, out of this world stats. But Pro Bowls have, to be honest, they've come to like really not mean as much as in other sports. Like, as far as, you know, you look at like the NBA All-Star game or MLB All-Star game, it's just a different, you've seen it, especially in recent years, it's kind of really losing steam and they're really trying to kind of save that whole process. But a lot of that also is dependent on whether you're on a good or a bad team and how that team is performing. And there were years when Cleveland was doing very well and they were, you know, going all the way to play against Denver and coming up just short and were so close to going all the way. But there were also years that were some tougher years that he played through in Cleveland and then in his last 3 years in Atlanta. And that shouldn't be, like, he shouldn't be docked for that. You know what I mean? So I feel like that Pro Bowl argument is not very valid.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. First of all, the 4 years that he made the Pro Bowl, the Browns made the playoffs those 4 years. And yeah. It's important, and I don't have the names in front of me either, but there were a lot of great linebackers playing when your dad played.
Yes.
I'm sure Peter can probably fill the names in better I can, but a lot of guys made the Pro Bowl year in and year out. It was tough to crack that lineup too.
Yeah, in that period of time, you know, you've got obviously the NFC guys, Lawrence Taylor, and then a bunch of others. John Anderson at the Packers never made a Pro Bowl, and that guy was a tremendous
unbelievable
player.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
You know, and you think of Carl Banks at the Giants as well, and then the AFC was stacked with linebackers at that time.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at your dad, you look at Chip Banks, you look at Andre Tippett, Cornelius Bennett a little bit later. You know, the AFC was stacked with linebackers. So I think
The guys from Pittsburgh and Ted Hendricks, Mike Merriweather,
Hendricks, Rod Martin of the Raiders, all of those guys around that period. You know, so I think you're right that the Pro Bowl thing is a funny, strange thing. You know, not only does it become a popularity vote around teams that make the playoffs and whatever else, it's also a popularity vote around market size and everything else. And you know, even guys like, you know, I'm just trying to think off the top of my head. Art Monk made the Pro Bowl three times, I think, and he's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Ray Nitschke, and I know the Pro Bowl was different back then. Ray Nitschke made the Pro Bowl one time. You know,
that's amazing.
And so, you know, it's a one season popularity vote, isn't it? And it's difficult, and you understand why that game's there, and you want to honor the All Stars, but it's also some of it you have to take with a little bit of a pinch of salt.
Well, Ozzie Newsom's in that group too. Ozzie, and I can't remember if he made it 3 or 4 years. And you would think that Ozzie Newsom would have made it every year that he played, as great as he was.
Yeah.
Well, that's not the case.
You know, and that's simply because he was a great player at the same time that Kellen Winslow was playing for the Chargers and Todd Christensen was playing for the Raiders and what have you. And you know, it just
they can't have two or three Hall of Famers playing at the same time, it doesn't take away from the other players' accomplishments.
Yeah, and I think Peter, you brought up a good point, and when you're talking about like the size of the media market. It's like you're trying to compare Cleveland to like an LA or a New York or even like a Dallas or an Atlanta that have huge media markets. It's just, you know, and Cleveland just does not get as much love nationally, you know, and I know the last, you know, 10 years have been rough as far as like, you know, winning percentage, but even at their heyday, I don't feel like they were getting nearly as much coverage as like Dallas was getting in their heyday, or, you know, the Giants were getting in their heyday, or, you know, it's a smaller media market. So it, in essence, it gets less coverage, and who votes on the Hall of Fame? The media, their media members.
And it brings up an interesting question as to whether if the Browns keep on the, what I hope is an upward trajectory, Rod, if they keep on their upward trajectory and become a perennial playoff team, whether that starts to re-highlight some of the players from previous eras.
Absolutely.
I hope so, because as a lifelong Packers fan, that's absolutely what I feel has happened in Green Bay.
Yes.
So since the 90s and beyond, the spotlight on Lombardi's Packers and Jerry Kramer and the likes of those guys has become higher because there's just been a higher spotlight on Green Bay as a football town.
Absolutely. And that you're absolutely right, because when this is the unfortunate side of it, is the fact that like it's about buzz and relativity and, you know, are you relevant? And so if the Browns are in this, you know, and not to digress on what's going on this season, but I think the media set the Browns up as far as like fans' expectations too high. You don't go from overnight to being a Super Bowl contender from like really struggling, you know? And yeah. I think there is a lot of positivity, and I know it's frustrating. And I'm extremely invested, as you know, and have been since I was born. But I think there's positivity. I do want to say that, because there's momentum, and it takes time, and they have a very young team. With that being said, the more that they win, not only does it bring relativity to them, and does it bring awareness and kind of like a buzz around the city of Cleveland, in essence, that also, you know, reminds people of some of the incredible players in the past who may have been overlooked these last years when they've been losing, because like the national media doesn't want to talk about the Browns other than to be negative. You know, because it's like, oh, here the Browns go, you know. I think as that narrative changes, and it is, and I believe it will continue to change as they develop young talent, I think more and more awareness will start to come out about, you know, former players, you know, with my dad being one of them.
Yeah, and there are other guys that people talk about, but we won't get into that right now. But you guys have a great point right there, yeah. Jen, I have a few questions from people from Twitter asked for you. These are more kind of questions about your dad and his feelings. So answer if you're able. If not, What was his favorite team to play against?
Ooh, that's a good question. You know what? I know now. It would be the Houston Oilers, and that's because he got to go up against his brother twice every year. And he said, you know, it was almost like there was something extra special because they were both in the AFC Central at the time with the way the league was structured. He said it was extra special, almost felt like Super Bowl level. And he said they each took so much pride in the fact that the game planning leading up to that game very often centered around each other. So like Bruce said, the Oilers would always be like, all right, we've got to contain Clay Matthews. Like, we've got to get him here. We've got to pay attention. Someone's got to be aware of where he is. We've got to double team him. And Bruce would take, you know, pride in that, and vice versa. So I think the fact that he got to play against his brother at the highest level twice a year, I know that would be his response.
How much would my wife love to hear that answer? growing up in Houston, as an Oilers fan in the Love You Blue era, she'd love that. Yeah.
So many stories around the Oilers. Crazy.
I don't think I mentioned that question was from Mike Pyatt. And two quick questions from Jason at Browns Huddle. What was your dad's most memorable moment as a Cleveland Brown? That might be a tough one for you. Not sure.
Yeah. You know what, though? I mean, I have to believe that if not at the top, right there near the top, is his interception of Jim Kelly on the goal line to steal that win. He just said, and he kind of broke it down, and I can't remember. I'll have to have him tell me the story again so I can like memorize what he said, because he remembers like play by play, and he goes, okay, and this guy was supposed to go over there and there was a chance, and I thought, you know what, okay, if he cuts and runs a slant route, then I can go here, and he intercepted it, and it was just like, I mean, it's magical. It's so funny how often people send me that video on Twitter and I still watch it and get the chills, like as if this just happened like last night on Monday Night Football. I'm like, this is the greatest play ever. And then they show the video, like they scan, and then you see Daryl Talley on the Bills just like fall down. And, you know, and the Bills went on to, they were amazingly talented. So that has to rank up there with, you know, at the top, if not the favorite, you know, memory. Yeah. But he would say, as far as overall memories, and he said this a million times and he means it, is just being on the field and competing with his teammates. And he really, it was a good group of guys. And, you know, he was saying all their nicknames during the Ring of Honor speech. And I'm like, Dad, I don't know who half of these guys are. Like, I know BB, you know, is Brian Brennan. And I know that, like, you know, this is this. And, but he really had, and they were funny. Oh my gosh. At the Ring of Honor, it was like, first of all, a lot of these players have not seen me since I was like in seventh grade. So they have me stuck in like seventh grade. And I'm like a full grown adult now. I'm in my 30s. You know, it's like, so it was so cool to see like Kevin Mack and Eric Metcalf and Hanford Dixon and Bernie Kosar and all of them who came out. And they just like, there was a camaraderie. There's a camaraderie that exists in the NFL that you hear all the guys talk about it. And that, like, those Cleveland teams, especially in that era, Bernie, Kevin Metcalf, Webster Slaughter, all of them, those are his greatest memories. And it's so funny because they get back together. And even if they haven't seen each other in like 5 years, they pick right up where they left off. It's the oddest thing, you guys. It's like they'll go back to like inside jokes and like, oh, remember that one play you did this and he came off. And then like, remember the D coordinator was yelling at him. And we were like, I don't know. You know, it is
like so a family. Funny. Right.
Yes.
Or like a family.
Yes. Yeah. And they just pick right up where they're like grown kids.
Yeah.
Like it's very fun. It's pretty cool to witness. Yeah.
Well, I think you probably answered this. That was Jason's last question. What is he most proud of during his football career?
I'd say that he gave it his all, that he prepared. You know, he really took preparation seriously, whether that was the off season and training and staying in shape, or, you know, watching game film and going above and beyond and staying after practice, just his preparation so that his level of play could be at a certain level. And I would say just that he really gave it his all and put everything into it. And that, you know, they went out there as, you know, a team and really gave it their all. You know, they left nothing on the field. That doesn't mean it always ended. Yeah. The outcome was what they wanted, but at the end of the day, you know, they worked hard and I think that was a good group of guys. You know, it's they were good for the city and the city was good for them and they were good role models. And you know, that's what I'm most proud of, you know, with my dad, just the way he conducts himself, the way he treats people, the way he carries himself, because ultimately the earthly accomplishments come and go and those fade. And really the way you treat people and what you do with your platform, you know, is something that he exemplifies very, very positively. And that's an incredible thing.
Yeah, definitely. So the Hall of Fame, things are a little bit different this year. There's going to be 20 people going into the Hall of Fame this year. So it's still going to be 5 players from the modern era, 10 senior inductees, 3 contributors, and 2 coaches. So do you guys really feel like that's going to make a change for this year for Clay? Or is it something that could conceivably just kind of open things up down the road?
For me, Rod, I think it potentially opens things up down the road.
I agree.
So the 10 seniors that they're putting in, those guys are going in straight. There's no vote on those guys.
Right.
So the 10 that get nominated from the 100, I think they're cutting it down to, or have just cut it down to. I think that, you know, that's an attempt in essence to clear up some of the backlog of some of the other very worthy players. You know, some guys from the 20s and 30s that were on the all decades teams and the 40s and 50s and so on that ought to have long since been in the Hall of Fame, and they've suffered from lack of publicity, from nobody understands their body of work, etc.
So similar
issues. But I think what it does do is it clears up some of that backlog for down the line. I mean, I would like to have seen the Hall of Fame put more seniors in. I don't think 10's enough.
I know.
But, it's a start, right?
It's a start, and maybe they'll do something in the future. But every little bit like that, I think, helps down the line.
I agree. I think at first people misunderstood when they first released. People were like, oh, this is great. Like, Clay should definitely get in now. And I thought, well, but he's, I think people too, a lot of people weren't aware that he's still a modern day candidate,
yeah.
You know, for
yeah.
this year. And then I believe next year is his last year. Then he would go to the senior. So again, that's a whole different process with this year, like you said, being a unique process. But yes, I think that would be more down the line, but I'm hoping that he could, obviously I want him to get in this year. You know, and if not this year, next year as a modern day candidate before he moves to the senior committee or to the senior group.
And that senior group's a strange thing because, you know, as you know, it's normally two each year. It's very difficult to get in that two. But I think just about every year, perhaps bar one, since they've gone to that, both of those two have been nominated, have gone straight into the Hall of Fame. So if you could get into that two, you've got, you know, a 99% chance of getting in, which, you know, is a route that, you know, may be available down the line. But I think I'm keeping my fingers crossed. I think it will happen before then.
I sure hope so.
Yeah, me too. Me too. So, Jen, what can the fans do most, you know, to help out, to show their support and help to make this happen?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I get asked that a lot. Ultimately, the voters hold all the weight. And so I think at this point, as I'm in this push to really release a lot of the comparison graphics and testimonials, honestly, retweeting and then tagging voters, I've put the link to the list before, but that can be found on the Pro Football Hall of Fame website, and it'll show you the voters and then what their media market is and what, you know, who they work for. So honestly, at this point, that's the best way, is reaching out to voters, because they're the ones who hold all the weight, you know, at every stage of this process. So, you know, whether it's forwarding graphics or other or articles, you know, because there are things out there that I'm not even aware of, articles that are written. So I guess it would just be, you know, contacting the voters and retweeting and tagging them and just helping kind of create awareness, as I said, which is my ultimate goal for these voters as to my dad's body of work. And then the voting on the website, you know, that creates awareness. Like you said earlier, my dad was the face when they said, hey, fan voting is up, fan, you know, and they had mentioned like fan favorite Clay Matthews. So, you know, it's like, I don't know how much that plays into it, but still there's some buzz there that like, I thought was really cool.
I was happy to see it. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought, hey, well, they're taking note, you know, and we'll see. Yeah. We'll see kind of how that happens. But I would just say, contacting the voters, tagging the voters in that list. I can release that again, like on a link in my on Twitter, but that's on the Pro Football Hall of Fame site. So just contact those voters and encourage them.
Yeah, that's a great idea. So,
and if anyone has relationships with, you know, former players, specifically Hall of Fame players, and they would be willing to give a testimonial, that is another thing that would be huge for me, because I don't know all of them. I mean, I don't even know a handful of them. So I'm doing my best, but, you know, I'm one person. So it's like, if anyone out there has a connection and can get like a quote as to about my dad's body of play or why he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame from a, obviously current Hall of Famers hold the most weight. And then also people who, just other star players would probably come second, or coaches trying to get to Bill Belichick. So yeah, if anyone has connections for testimonials, that also holds a lot of weight with the voters.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Peter, do you have any final words about Clay Matthews Jr. and the Hall of Fame?
I just want to say, as somebody that didn't grow up as a Browns fan, I looked up to two players growing up, Earl Campbell and Clay Matthews Jr.
Wow.
And Earl, you know, has deservedly been in the Hall of Fame for a long, long time now. And Clay Matthews Jr. should be there, take his rightful place. and it should happen as quickly as possible. And the numbers support it. His versatility, his durability, everything supports him being there. And you know, we just keep our fingers crossed, Rod and Jen, that it will happen soon.
That's some good company to be in. Earl Campbell is a stud. I'm like, Dad, how did you? He goes, that man was so strong and so powerful. And
those thighs. Those thighs.
My God. I mean, I think they're like I'm the size of one of his, like my entire body is the size of one of his quads. He's just unbelievable. Yeah. And again, but because he played before all the social media and just media in general being as big as it is now, you know, people, I don't think the people who watched him did, but, you know, kids and younger people today don't realize he was a stud. And, that's amazing. That's a good reminder to me. I got to reach out to Earl. That's a good, that'd be a great one to get. Yeah. Well, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's very interesting. I'll get into discussions on Twitter about, you know, who the greatest running backs are and so forth. And I get people who don't know how great, you know, Walter Payton was. I'm like, oh my gosh, you need to watch some of his video. They're like, well, I never saw him play. So,
that's the problem is you have like younger and even some of the media voters, like they didn't see some of these guys. They didn't, you know, they weren't around for their career. So that ends up, you know, hurting them with the Hall of Fame.
And that really sums it up, doesn't it? If, you know, people don't know who Walter Payton was, but they don't know how great, Earl Campbell was. And he truly was, you know, it's a difficult job to then make sure that all of that publicity and all of that stuff's out there about your dad, Jen. It's hard.
Right.
That's right.
Right. No, it's so true. But ultimately, I believe, you know, that his career will be recognized, and boy, will it be special. And like I said, that, you know, and I'll end on this. You know, when my uncle was inducted in 2007, and I'm pretty sure it was 2007, but I've had like a total of like 5 hours of sleep in three nights, so forgive me but I'm pretty sure it was 07. You would not believe how many 57 Browns jerseys of my dad that fans were wearing up there because they knew he'd be there because my uncle was being inducted. I remember thinking, this is unbelievable. So it kind of was this little glimpse into like when he gets inducted, you know, what it will be like. And that's what I said as the dog pound captain at the game. You know, I was like, it's time for Cleveland to show Canton how it's done, you know, and take over that city and take over that stadium and like show the country, show the world, show the national media, like how it's done in Cleveland, you know, and that is the day I look forward to.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. It's going to be crazy. And it's going to be amazing. So, Jen, why don't you give your Twitter handle out so everybody can give you a follow there if they're not following you currently?
Yeah, or as my dad calls it, the Twitter. He doesn't know anything
about Twitter.
He may be like, you know, if Bill Belichick is like a level zero knowledge of social media, my dad might just be like a one. He's not far ahead of him. Anyway, we start calling it the Twitter now. Yeah, so it is Jen Matthews 57. So Jen with two N's, Matthews with two T's, 57. And that's where I put out a lot of the information, most of it about my dad and ways to help and tag different voters. So I so appreciate truly each and every person that retweets or sends cool stats or videos or, you know, Scott, who's made graphics, just people have really kind of come alongside me in this journey and both of you as well. And just so, so grateful for the support. And it'll be one big party in Canton.
It's going to be great. And Peter, people can find you at the
underscore IT underscore hedgehog.
I love it. All right. I feel so unoriginal with my actual name. I'm like,
so people know who you are, Jen, so it's easier that way for you. So
maybe
I just get called Mr. Hedgehog these days.
Mr. Hedgehog.
I love it. Well, Mr. Hedgehog, you're probably like just dying to get to sleep right now. Since what time is it your time?
It is now 2:45.
You guys, this is a perfect example of how passionate and knowledgeable and unbelievable just the support has been just, yeah, this True. Is a perfect case in point. That's all I can say. And Rod, you're amazing. Thanks for your support and thanks for coordinating this. I love getting together with you guys to talk about this. So thanks,
John.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun. You guys can follow me at CLE Rod B, and I am going to try to retweet the article that Menachem put out a year ago so that people can look at that again.
That's great.
I want to thank you, John, and Peter. This has been a lot of fun. I think I could probably do this every week talking about your dad, you know, until he gets in the Hall of Fame.
Well, hopefully that's sooner than later, and then we can just party it up in Canton.
That's right. That sounds good.
All right, guys. Thank you so
thanks,
much.
Thanks, guys.
You're welcome. This has been the Browns Blitz.